Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Pesach and Shabbos HaGadol. This will, I think, be Torah for the entire week of Pesach, but it's a sort of a trial run for Shabbos HaGadol. The Shabbos HaGadol Drosha will be delivered here at the Israel Center on Shabbat. And we're going to do it now for our those who are learning with us in Chutz La'aretz. Unfortunately, you don't have a sheet, so I'm going to make reference to the sheet in terms of the sources. So the title of this drasha is Bidikat Chametz, A Search for Meaning. So let me just begin by commenting that culinary experts tell you that everything is in the presentation, how the table is presented, the servers, the silver, the china, the shine of the cutlery, the placement of all of the utensils on the table, and the order of the courses, their placement on the plate, the presentation of vegetables, just the right vegetables on the side of the plate. Just get the phone off. Okay. Nowhere do you see this more than the Pesach Seder. Presentation is at the heart of the Seder, and our Nashim Tzidkaniyot work very hard to set a beautiful Seder table, to present a beautiful Seder table. What I want to discuss today is the presentation of Pesach in the Torah. How Pesach is for the first time presented to us in the Torah, and I want to point out by asking four questions in the tradition of Pesach to show the oddity and the strangeness and really the mystery of the presentation of Pesach in the Torah. So number one on the sheet is from Shmos Yud Gimel, and this is actually, before I begin, I want to apologize. I want to dedicate this year in honor of Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner, Harav Yitzchak Kirzner Shlita, who was one of the Gedolei Harabanim of Toronto for many, many years. And I want to dedicate this year to him. He should enjoy good health, a refuah shlema, and enjoy nachas together with his children and great-grandchildren for many, many years. I know that I have the kavod of his watching the shiurim, and I want to really dedicate this year to Rabbi Kirzner. So number one on the sheet is from Shmot Perek Yud Gimel, and this, by the way, it will come in later. It's one of the four parshiot that are in the Tefillin Shel Rosh, in the Tefillin. So here you have a presentation of Pesach. And Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor, Kadesh li kol b'chor. And then the Torah says, Vayomer Moshe el Ha'am. Moshe says to the people, Zachor es hayom hazeh, asher yetzatem in Mitzrayim. Remember the day you left me Egypt from the house of slavery. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. Velo yachel chametz. Don't eat chametz. So here's the question. We are commanded immediately upon leaving Egypt to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt, Yitzias Mitzrayim. And how do you remember Yitzias Mitzrayim? By not eating chametz. Now that's very strange. And matic, a guide to memory, is a positive act. Here we have a negative act. Remember Yitzias Mitzrayim by not eating chametz. Very strange. We normally think of, I'm going to remember something, so I do something. But you know, like, remember Yom HaAtzmaut. Don't say challah. Well, if you want to remember Yom HaAtzmaut, is that don't say halal? So that's really what's being said here. Remember Yitziat Mitzrayim, don't eat chametz. Very strange. Second question we have, if you go down to Pasuk Zayin, Mitzvat Yechel Shivas Hayamim Velo Yirah L'chol Chametz, and you have to Shivas Yomim Teichol Matzos. For 7 days you eat matzah. So here's the second question. This is, we understand why Chazal tell us we have to eat matzah on Pesach, because we left Bichipazon in a hurry, we didn't have time, the bread didn't rise, so we remember what took place in Egypt. But still, putting aside that notion, This is a celebratory moment. Jews know how to celebrate. On Yom Tov, we have two challahs. So why don't we celebrate here with challahs? Why do we have to bring back the matzahs of Mitzrayim? If you speak to Holocaust survivors, they should literally be well, the children of Holocaust survivors, they will tell you there have been studies with children of Holocaust survivors, and one of the highlights of their comments was the dinner table. That their parents, Holocaust survivors, almost every night would have a basket full of bread, fresh bread, piled high on the table, and the children would be encouraged and almost obsessively to eat bread, to eat bread. This was subconsciously, in the subconscious of the survivor, we didn't have bread. For all the years that we suffered in the camps, and the work camps, the labor camps, we didn't have bread. We ate potato skins, right? To get a piece of bread was like gold. So there's almost an obsession with bread. So this is how we remember. We remember Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim, the chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, not to eat bread, but to eat matzah. And it's further complicated. If you look in 2 on the sheet, this is from the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, in Hilchot Deot. The Rambam talks about, in the third parak of Hilchos Deos, he talks about those things that one should not eat. And he says, he writes here, Yesh ma'achol sheheim ra'im bioter, ad ma'od. There are things that we should stay away from. And he goes through a whole category. And then he writes that there is another category, V'yesh ma'achol sheheim ra'im. There are certain foods that are bad for us. They're not healthful. Aval einam kama harishonim l'ro. But they're not as bad as the first category. L'fichach ro'y l'adam shelo le'achol mehen ela me'at. You should only eat a very little bit amount of these. V'achar yamim harbe. And from time to time, not on a regular basis. V'lo yargi l'atzmo liyot mezono man. And don't make this your staple. Right? What does he mention? Dagim gedolim, large fish, gevina, cheese, chalav, shesho, achar shenechlav, chavdal shos, the milk that could be soured. He talks about basar shorit, basar shvarit, red meat. So we can appreciate that today. Doctors say stay away from red meat, right? And he goes to the whole list. What does he say here? Velechim matzot, matzah. Matzah, the Rambam list, the same Rambam who tells us in Hilchos Chametz Matzah that there's a mitzvah d'oraisa, a Torah commandment, to eat matzah the first night of Pesach. And according to the Briskerov, the way we understand the Rambam, if there's not a chiyuv, there's at least a kiyum, we fulfill the mitzvah of matzah even every seventh, all the days of Pesach. That same Rambam tells us that matzah is not a healthful food. And one should stay away from matzah. He should eat it very sparingly. Very sparingly. Matzah is not good for you. So here we're told, first of all, we're immediately confronted with a restriction. As soon as we leave Egypt, the first thing we do to remember Mitzrayim, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Chesed of Hashem, is a restriction not to eat chametz. And secondly, to eat something that really, in a certain sense, is not good for us. That's what we're supposed to do. Okay. Number three, the Rambam. Now, the third thing is at the end of this parsha, all of a sudden, the Torah introduces Vayalcha la'os al yadcha lezikaron bein einecha, a memory, another aid to memory. We have a positive aid to the memory of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's tefillin. We should put the words of the Torah on our arm and on our head. He's talking about tefillin. What does tefillin have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? Very strange. There's a kind of mystery in the presentation of Pesach to us. And the mystery really continues in the sense that if you look at number three, this is the first Tosfos in Masechta Pesachim, where he talks about the Isser of Chametz. The prohibition of eating Chametz on Pesach is the most severe of all the Isurim of the Torah. There is nothing that compares to the Isser of Chametz. Chametz is Osir b'mashehu. You can, it's afilu be'elef lo batel. Even 1 in 1,000 matzah, Chametz rather, is not nullified. And we have in the Torah many times, we have batel b'rov, something is nullified in the majority, batel b'shishim, 1 in 60. Nowhere in the Torah, aside from the Isser of Chametz, do you have this notion of mashehu, that just a little bit of Chametz is a no-no. We can't have that. And Tosfos explains here, because badili mina inshe, because people are accustomed to chametz, they're accustomed to having chametz. and therefore we have to stay away from it. We have to go to an extreme to stay away from it. Okay, so all very mysterious. And then in 4, you have a comment that this is the Be'er Heitiv in Hilchos Pesach and Siman Taf Mem Zayin, and the Be'er Heitiv in discussing this prohibition of Mashu, of not to have any amount of chametz in our possession, he concludes by saying a powerful statement in the name of the Arizal. Ha'Arizal Kasav, ha'nizar b'mashu chametz b'pesach, muftach lo shelo yechta kol hashana. If someone keeps Pesach properly, if someone is kosher l'Pesach, that there's not a mashu, any amount of chametz, he is guaranteed that he will not sin the entire year. That's a mouthful. The Arizal is saying basically that if I adhere to the principle of not eating chametz and having a chametz-free environment, then I become a perfect Jew. I become a perfect Jew. I don't sin. What does the Arizal mean by that? How do we understand that? Is that really true? The Arizal said it, so we have to accept it. But what does it really mean? Finally, if chametz is so bad, number 5 on the sheet, if you come to Shavuos, when you come to Shavuot, we offer a korban. And it's a korban, a Yom Tov korban, that is unique. Of all the chagim, of all the Yom Tovim, we offer a korban of chametz. Together with the korban, we offer shtei alechem. The shtei alechem is chametz. So if chametz is so bad, why is it that on Shavuos we offer chametz? So those are some of the questions that really relate to the mystery of the presentation of Pesach. And let's go on. Before we answer the questions, let's take a look at the halachic understanding of how we rid ourselves of chametz, and we see that there's a lot of precision involved. Number 6 on the sheet, this is a Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Chaf Aleph. There is a machlokas, a difference of opinion between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim of how we rid ourselves of the chametz. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Bir chametz el ein bir chametz el b'sreifa." You have to burn the chametz. Chachamim say, "Af mefarer v'zora l'ruach o matel liyam." You can throw it into the sea. You can throw it into the wind. Anyway, what's the machlokes? What is the difference of opinion between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim of how you destroy the chametz? So, number 7, this is the Chiddush Agrach, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And Rav Chaim explains what is the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether destroying chametz is an iser cheftza or an iser gavra. Are we dealing with the cheftza, with the object of chametz? I have to rid myself completely of the object of the chametz. It's about getting rid of that object, that cheftza chametz. If that's the case, I have to burn it. I have to turn it into ashes. Or the Chachamim say that chametz is a prohibition on me. It's an iser gavra, on the gever, on the person. I have to have a chametz-free environment. My space has to be chametz-free. So if my space has to be chametz-free, I can get rid of the chametz any way I want. Just get it out of my space. That's the machlokas, sreifa versus chametz. How do we paskin? Is it an iser gavra or an iser cheftza? Is it the getting rid of that object of chametz? Is it a kind of cooties? The game that children play? Or is it an iser gavra? Is it a prohibition on me, on the person? So the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Taf Mem Hei really says both. Ketzad bir chametz, how do you destroy the chametz? Sarfo, you burn it. Or farav v'zor l'ruach o zor kaliyam. Or throw it in the sea, throw it in the river. Or flush it down the toilet. But the minhag is, according to the Shulchan Aruch, l'sarfo. The custom, the Ramah tells us, is to burn it. And we all know, Sreifas Chametz is a beautiful minhag. We get together, we do the burning of the Chametz. But technically speaking, even though the custom is to burn it, we have not resolved halachically the issue of whether it's an Isser on the person or an Isser on the object of the Chametz. And if somebody doesn't burn it and throws it into the sea, he has fulfilled the mitzvah. Now, while we're on the subject, what about Chametz and itself? Is chametz itself considered, as far as a prohibition, is it considered an iser gavra or an iser chametz? Well, let's take a look at a Gemara, also in Pesachim, on Daf Ches Amud Aleph. And there, the Gemara talks about chametz she'avar alav et ha-Pesach. Chametz that you have after Pesach. So there's a discussion in the Gemara, according to Rabbi Yehuda, chametz she'ar alav es haPesach. If you find chametz after Pesach that you had from before Pesach, there's an issur d'oraisa. It's a Torah prohibition to have benefit from that chametz. According to Reb Shimon, it's not an issur d'oraisa. So how do we understand that machlokes? So in number 10, you have the tzafnas paneach from the Rogatchover Gon, and the Rogatchover says that this is the same machlokes, whether it's an issur gavra or an issur chefza. If you hold that the issur chametz is an issur chefza, that the object of the chametz is a no-no, so even after Pesach, it continues. That object is not good for me, I cannot benefit from it. But if you hold that the prohibition of chametz is an issur gavra, it's a prohibition on me, well, that prohibition is only for the 7 days of Pesach. Once Pesach is over, that issur gavra is suspended. So the chametz after Pesach is permitted. How do we... Now you might think that this is really doesn't have a contemporary ring to it, but actually, if you look at number 11, this is a tshuva from the Oneg Yom Tov, but 150 years ago, and it really impacts on us more today than perhaps any other time in Jewish history. What if you're in one time zone, and your chametz is in another time zone? Let's say, for example, I'm in Israel, I'm visiting Eretz Yisrael for Pesach. I have chametz in America, right? So after Pesach, is my chametz aser or not? I finished Pesach earlier. So for me, it's no longer Pesach, but my chametz is still keeping Pesach. So how do we paskin? So according to the Oneg Yom Tov, and according to number 12, the Rav Moshe Feinstein, in Igros Moshe, Chelek Dalet, Simen Sadi Dalet and Sadi Hei, L'chadchila, in practical terms, we should, in practice, we have to be machmir, we have to be stringent, because we're not sure if it's an Isser Chefza or an Isser Gavra. If it's an Isser Gavra, if it depends on me, I'm in Israel, Pesach is over, my chametz should be permitted when I get home. If it's an Isser Chefza, if it's the problem of the object of the chametz, that chametz is going to be forbidden to me when I get back home, and I cannot eat my chametz, right? So Rav Moshe says that b'dieved, in the second instance, we are mekel, we are lenient. We're lenient because it's really chametz she'ar alav es haPesach anyway, we say, is only rabbinical because we have not resolved the issue of whether or not it's an Isser Chefza or an Isser Gavra, so you can really enjoy the chametz after Pesach. Okay? Now, let's go to this tefillin issue. We asked before, what does tefillin have to do with it? What does tefillin have to do with Pesach? In order to answer that question, I want to go to, I want to explain very briefly a well-known machlokas concerning tefillin. There are actually two kinds of tefillin. There's Rashi tefillin, which is what everybody wears, and then there's tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, which some people wear, not everybody. Many Hasidic Jews, most Hasidic Jews wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. There are many non-Hasidic Jews who also wear them. The halacha is that we go with Rashi's tefillin. But someone who is considered scrupulous in his behavior, there's nothing wrong, and he is encouraged, actually, to also wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. I daven during the week in Kiryat Sanz, and I'm probably the only person in the entire shul that doesn't wear two pairs of tefillin, doesn't put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, because Chassidim, as I pointed out, wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. What's the origin of Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, and what's the machlokas? So I want to refer to a shiur that Rav Soloveitchik gave in 1975, the Yurtzeit Shir, and the topic of his Shir was the Tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. And I want to just refer to his presentation of the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, and then we'll take it in perhaps a different direction than Rav Soloveitchik did. So first of all, you have the discussion is a Gemara in Menachos on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. And here's what the rabbis say. Ketzad Sidran, what's the order? We have four parshiot of the Torah in the tefillin. So what's the order? So the Gemara says, Kadesh Li, that's the parsha that we saw in number one, the first parsha of the tefillin. Kadesh Li v'hayaki avicha, when I bring you into the land, I take you out of Egypt and bring you into the land. Both of these parshiot are from Sefer Shmos, from Exodus. Shema v'hayayim Shemo, the parsha of Shema Yisrael, Kabbalah Satorah, Kabbalah Solam Mitzvah, O Malchus Shemayim, and Vahayayim Shemoa, Kabbalah Sam Mitzvah, the acceptance of the Mitzvah from Shema, from Sefer Dvorim, Mismol, or on the left. So Rashi says that we go according to the order. The tefillin should be from right to left on the tefillin, you have these four parshas. That's the order of the parshas. You have Kadesh Likol Bechor, Vahaya Ki Aviecha, Vahaya Im Shemoa, and Shema Yisrael. You go in the chronological order that they're presented in the Torah, right? That's Rashi, because it says Kesidra. You put them on Kesidra, right? But Rabbeinu Tam, he disagrees with Rashi. He argues with Rashi's interpretation. If you were correct, then the Gemara should say, that says Tanu Rabbonin, how do we do this? The Braisa wouldn't have said Ketzat Sidra. How do you order the tefillin? Kadesh li kol bechor, v'ayak yaviach ha'ashma, v'yam shema. But the Braisa doesn't say it like that. The Braisa doesn't say, how do you order it? And put it. The Braisa says, Ketsa sidran, how do you order them? Kadesh li kol bechor, v'ayak yaviach miyamin, on the right. Pause. Shema, v'ayam shema, on the left. So what is Rabbeinu Tam saying? If Rashi was right, it wouldn't be first two parshas on the right, Shema and Vayah and Shema on the left. He would have just said, do it in order. But he says, these two on the right, these two on the left. Says Rabbeinu Tam, there are two separate sets of parshas. You do Kadesh and Vayah from the right, and then Shema and Vayah and Shema from the left, and they have the two Vahayahs in the middle. It's hard to picture. But according to Rashi, it's one chronological trip of parshios from Shmos to Devarim. From Rabbeinu Tam, you have Shmos on this side and Devarim on this side. So, what's happening here? The duality of tefillin according to Rabbeinu Tam. According to Rabbeinu Tam, and the way Rav Soloveitchik explains it, that whereas Rashi is talking about one idea of tefillin, the Rabbeinu Tam somehow is talking about two very different notions that tefillin represent. Two very different Jewish obligations of tefillin. One represented by psukim in Sefer Shmos that deal with Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the other dealing with Shema and Vayam Shema. Let's look very briefly at the parshas. So we saw the first parsha in one. It deals with the Exodus from Egypt, the Isser of Chametz, the mitzvah of eating matzah, and the mitzvah of putting on tefillin. In the next parsha, Vayaki Avicha, talks about coming to Eretz Yisrael. Talks about our freedom, that we left Egypt. And it smacks of the Seder. Some of the roots of the Seder are here. Vahayaki Yishalcha bin Chamachar, when your child asks you, Mazar, what is this all about? Vahamarte love, you tell him, Bechozik Yer, Hotsiyanu Hashem, Mitzrayim, Mibes Avadim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of slavery. So the first two parshas deal with Mitzrayim, Yetzias Mitzrayim. The second two parshas deal with accepting the kingdom of God, with Shema Yisrael, accepting Torah, accepting mitzvahs. So what you have here, really, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, you have two dimensions which are kind of in tension. They're in tension with each other. They're kind of facing off like in a hockey match. So you have the two psukim, the pull of Yetzias Mitzrayim on the right, which represents our physical freedom, the traveling, the journey to our physical homeland eventually, but the sudden upheaval, the revolution, the freedom, the physical freedom. It's kind of a historical presentation of Jewish responsibility. And on the other end, conflicting and at odds with that, you have not the historical obligation of the Jew, but the religious obligation of the Jew. The obligation to accept the Rabbanu Shalom, the obligation to accept Torah, the obligation to accept mitzvahs. It's almost like, you know, the child asks naively in school, is Judaism a religion or is Judaism a race? And those are the two notions that are spoken about the way Rabbeinu Tam sets up the tefillin, the two dimensions, although, however you look at it, these two dimensions chronologically are progressive. Historically, they're progressive. We start out with the Exodus from Egypt, and we end at the foot of Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, where we receive the Torah. So practically speaking, they are time-wise progressive, right? Chronologically. We go from Egypt to Sinai. And in fact, two of these parsha are pre-Kabbalah HaTorah. They really were given to us. This was an introduction before we received the Torah. This was a kind of emergency setup where we were given mitzvahs to perform before we received the Torah, and those mitzvahs were, don't eat matzah, don't eat chametz rather, eat matzah, and be prepared, you're going to put on tefillin. Put these words as a memorial on your arm and on your head. And herein lies really the answer to all of the questions. And here we go. We go now to number 20 on the sheet, which is really a watershed moment in understanding the entire story of the Exodus, the historical obligation of the Jew, and number two, the revelation at Sinai, the religious obligation of the Jew. And this is the Ramban. The Ramban in Vayikra Perek Chof Gimel. And here the Ramban tells us that Shavuot, you know, women always ask the question, do I make a Shechianu on the last days of Pesach or not? Everybody forgets, do I make a Shechianu, do I not make a Shechianu? It's a very easy way to remember it. A Shechianu is made on every Yom Tov, the first days and the last days, except for one, Pesach. Because the last days of Pesach are not a special additional Yom Tov. The Atzeret, the conclusion of Pesach, says the Ramban, is Shavuos. Says the Ramban, it's a powerful statement that the Ramban made, that the days of the Omer are like Chol HaMoed. Pesach is the first days of the Yom Tov, Shavuos is the last days of the Yom Tov, and Sfiras HaOmer is Chol HaMoed. So Shavuos is really the culmination of Pesach. So you have Pesach and Shavuos. You have a duality. Our physical freedom versus our spiritual freedom. We're traveling from physical freedom to spiritual freedom. An old notion, a notion we should all be familiar with. Pesach is the chefza, the object, if you will, the restrictions that hold together a newly freed nation with no boundary. Very dangerous. You have someone who's freed from prison and he has nowhere to go. He has to be given some kind of a temporary boundary, some kind of temporary chefza, some obligation that he has to perform. And it was this initial pre-Torah, almost an emergency environment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up, and he gave us the restriction not to eat chametz. It's almost like a temporary thing. This was pre-Torah, right? The absence of chametz, now, was designed to, for what? Because chametz is a bad thing? I think not. I think that this temporary restriction of chametz is to teach us that chametz is really the staple of life. Bread. We need bread to survive. That the prohibition of chametz is given to us in order to appreciate what we don't have. That ultimately this is a temporary situation, but it's not good enough. These props that we set up on the table, the chefzas of chametz, of Pesach rather, of the Seder table, are only a temporary existence and to keep us going until we get to the ideal, which is Shavuos. In fact, it's kind of like the Rambam says, if you look on number 21 in the sheet, this is the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, that he talks about a person who's trying to correct a bad character trait. So the ideal of the Rambam is to be in the middle of the road with our character traits. But what if someone has a very bad character trait, like anger? So the Rambam tells us, here, one should go to an extreme, he should go to the opposite extreme, and work on himself from an extreme position, and then slowly bring himself back to where he's supposed to be. That's what Pesach is. That was what Yetzias Mitzrayim was. The Bajram puts us in this extreme situation of dealing with the total absence, even a mashu of chametz. Chametz, which is a good thing, but to do without it in order to begin that journey towards the moderate position, the position where we can enjoy both the Chefza and the Gavra, which we'll see in a minute. In a certain sense, Chefza Judaism is much more accessible, right? It's lovely, it's fun, it's enjoyable, it's beautiful. We sit down at a table, we have all of these props and all of these mitzvahs, the family comes together, but it really bespeaks a pre-Torah existence. Remember, this is before the Torah was given that we have this celebration of Pesach, and really, that's what we're going back to the tefillin. This is the two dimensions that the Rabbeinu Tam speaks about. The first two parshas of Tefillin speak about the sudden upheaval, the revolution, Yetzias Mitzrayim, our physical freedom, but it's only temporary, it's incomplete. We need the other two parshas of Tefillin. We need the parshas that deal with Kabbalah's HaTorah, Kabbalah's HaMitzvah, Kabbalah's O Malchus Shamayim. So again, Pesach, the Chefza, Shavuos, the Gavra, the person. The Chefza, you know, it's an external object. We deal with the four cups, we deal with the matzah on the table. It's almost like, to a certain extent, Lahavdil, you go to a museum, you see objects. Objects, they're external to your experience. But a Gavra experience, a personal experience, you internalize it. That's what Shavuos is, Kabbalah's HaTorah. We receive the Torah, that's the completion. And then, you know, it's almost like the difference between an engagement and a wedding. Pesach is an engagement. It's not quite the marriage yet. In fact, the rabbis use that metaphor. Someone who eats matzah on Erev Pesach is considered kaboel arusaso beves chamav. It's considered that he consumes he consummates the marriage celebration before the marriage is supposed to take place. There's no kiddushin. But yet Shavuos, the metaphor of Shavuos is kiddushin, is marriage. The Mishnah says that Shavuos, the day we receive the Torah, is Yom Chasunaso. It's our marriage with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's the completion. So, you know, I once had an administrative assistant who worked, before she worked with me, she was the secretary of a Reform rabbi in the temple. And the thing that used to drive her crazy was whenever there was a wedding, he would call up and ask her, did you have the props? Are all the props arranged? You have props. What are the props? You have the glass to break, you have the cup of wine, you have the chuppah, you have the lectern under the chuppah, however he set it up. But the props, the real props are missing. That's the chefza. Those are the external props. But ultimately, the real props of the chuppah are the chatan v'kala, are the chosn and kala, is the gavra, the persona who is coming to holiness, to kedushin. So on Shavuos, really, so Pesach, we have all these cheftzes, we have all these objects, but on Shavuos, there really is no cheftzah shal mitzvah. Not today. We have no sukkahs. You have a lulav and an esrog, Rosh Hashanah, you have a shofar, Pesach, you have the matzah, and so on. But when it comes to Pesach, all we have in idyllic times is we have the bikurim. We bring the bikurim and we bring the chametz. But without the gavra, without mikra bikurim, without reading the psukim, the verses of the first fruits, we have no Pesach. There has to be both. No Shavuos, we have to have the Chefza and the Gavra. We have to have the object as well as the person. The Ben Yisrael has to be there. So Pesach, we say, you know, I'm kosher at Pesach. What does it mean I'm kosher at Pesach? I've gotten rid of all the chametz, right? That's a temporary environment. Say, I'm kosher at Pesach. But that's temporary. After Pesach, you know, the lineups at the pizza shop or around the corner, Motzei Pesach, right? Wherever you live, right? Shavuos is not, I'm kosher to Shavuos. Shavuos is a sense of arrival. I've arrived at my destination. I've come to the end of the line. So you have stage one is Pesach. Very temporary. Very temporary, pre-Torah. Stage two, the progression from Pesach until Shavuos, right? But on Shavuos again, you have You need both. That's why we come back to Pesach. And in fact, I want to point out a very beautiful comment from Rav Moshe Feinstein in number 23. He's talking about a totally different subject. He was asked about whether or not it's permissible to use English names in calling people by non-Hebrew names. And he says you are. There's nothing wrong with it. He addresses here in this paragraph, what about the promise that we were given and the reward we receive, that the rabbis tell us, Chazal say that in the schus of Arba Dvorim, in the merit of four things, we were redeemed from Egypt, and one of them was Shelo Shino Eshmam, that we didn't change our names, we kept our Hebrew names. So if that's so important, that we were redeemed from Egypt for that reason, why do we not have to use Hebrew names today? Says Rav Moshe, brilliantly. That was pre-Torah. Pre-Torah, there was a need for some kind of a chefza, some kind of an emergency ruling, because we didn't have the Torah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this set of rules. One of them was, don't change your name. But once we now have 613 mitzvahs, we don't need that anymore. Then we can safely refer to someone by a non-Jewish name. It's very nice, it's very good, and it's preferable, he says, to use Hebrew names. But it's not forbidden by the Torah. Because why? This was a temporary injunction of the Ribbono Shel Olam, just like Pesach was an temporary milieu, an environment that was established for us. So too, in 22, you have Rav Shlomo Kluger answering a question that many commentaries ask, why is there no bracha on the mitzvah of Haggadah, of Sikur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of reciting the Haggadah? And he says, because it's temporary. We're not there yet. Once we receive the Torah and Shavuos, we'll get all the mitzvahs. We'll have all the brachas of every mitzvah. We don't need a bracha from... This is a pre-Torah experience. That pre-Torah experience is very imperfect. Very imperfect. But it's designed to set the stage for the perfect experience. And that brings us to the Arizal. The Arizal, if you recall, says that if you fulfill the mitzvah of eating, of even a mashru, not having any chametz, you are guaranteed of not sinning the entire year. And we ask, well, this is, he's saying that if you keep this mitzvah, you're a perfect Jew? The answer is, that's not a perfect Jew. A perfect Jew is not someone who has the ability to abstain from doing the wrong thing. That's only the first stage. That's the Pesach stage. The next stage is the Shavuot stage. The perfect person is a person who takes that developed personality of not sinning and of negative, right, and turns it into a positive by doing something meaningful with your life, by engaging in Torah and mitzvahs, by changing the environment of the world with Torah. That's the perfect person. That's sur meira v'ase tov. So Pesach is sur meira, and then Shavuos is ase tov. That's the perfect person. So the Arizal is not a steerer, really, not a contradiction to what we're saying. So chametz is going from Pesach until Shavuos is anybody really who lives in our times understands the duality and the tension of Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin in our world here in Israel. And we see it in the last few months with the election process, the tension between, is it enough to be a historical Jew, to be committed to the physical survival of the Jewish people, or to be committed to the religious destiny of the Jewish people. And we understand that we need both. And that's why we revisit Pesach every year, to remind ourselves of the duality of Chefza, the object of the objectification of our Yiddishkeit, and Gavra, creating a personality of Torah, that we need both. We need both, and we have to return to the source. In fact, I want to suggest that perhaps this sheds a new definition on the notion of lechem oni. We eat matzah on Pesach and we call it lechem oni. We know that Chazal have two definitions for lechem oni. It's A, poor man's bread. It's what poor man, it doesn't bake till the end. It's a cracker, that's all he can eat. He can't make a loaf of bread. And also it's lechem she'oni malav dvorim. We speak over the lechem, we speak over the matzah, we speak about the mitzvah of God saving us. I want to suggest a third interpretation of lechem oni, and that's number 24 on your sheets. Here, the rabbis in the Talmud, in the Gemara, in the Dorm Daf Mem Aleph Amad Aleph, are defining what poverty is. And they say, poverty, amarav, below ner, below shulchan, person who doesn't have electricity, he doesn't have furniture, right? Below isha, he's living alone, he has no wife, he has no family, right? Different interpretations. Finally, the Gemara concludes, ein ani ela bedeya. What is real poverty? A person who has no das, no intellect, no intellectual knowledge, no Torah. That is the real ani. So we eat lechem oni on Pesach because that represents this temporary state where all we have is our physical freedom, but we don't have the spirituality of Torah. We don't have the deya. We don't have Torah. So we are really poverty stricken on Pesach. Poverty in the sense of lechem oni, that it's bread without Torah. We haven't reached the end of the road. It's almost like, I don't know if you read, there was an article that went viral from the New York Times a few weeks ago, an op-ed from David Brooks, where he spoke about his visit to a food establishment in Brooklyn, and he wrote his expression of his beautiful, a beautiful essay on the Orthodox community and his impression. And he quotes there, and I want to quote one thing from it. It's not from him, and it's not from a rabbi, but he quotes a musical metaphor from a Catholic theologian, George Wego. And he says like this, at first, quote, at first piano practice for a child seems like drudgery, like self-limitation. But mastering the technique gives you the freedom to play well and create new songs. Life is less a journey than it is mastering a discipline or craft. And in a real sense, you know, Chochma Bagoyim Tamim, this is a beautiful idea expressing the journey from Pesach until Shavuos for all of us. And finally, that's what we see on the sheet in number 25. This is the Maisa with the Chachomim in the Haggadah, Rebbe Elezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Shaya Mesuvim, B'nei Brak, they were in B'nei Brak, Vayim Mesabrim, B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, Koloso, and they were talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim the whole night. And then at the end of the night, of their discussion of Yitzias Mitzrayim, part one of the journey, right? That temporary part of the construct of a Jew. Then the students came and they said to them, Ad Shabo Talmidei V'Amrulem Raboseinu, our teachers, he gives man kriyash mashal shachris. It's time to begin the journey to the other two parshas of the tefillin. So this, I think, is what is being said in this maisa. And in fact, at the end of the day, as I pointed out earlier, we paskin like Rashi. We wear Rashi tefillin, where we seamlessly travel an integrated journey with both the Chefza, the Gavra, with both the Exodus from Egypt, our commitment, our discipline, and our commitment to the physical development of the Jewish people and our religious commitment of the Jewish people, our spiritual commitment. We seamlessly travel with the Tefillin Shel Rashi from the banks of the Red Sea to the foot of Mount Sinai, and we celebrate the fullness of Jewish life with the duality of this existence, which begins at the Pesach Seder and concludes with the celebration of Shavuos. Thank you.